Thank you. preferred by March 2013, 4 million hectares of transferred land for probably on the social farms and the internet. Now, would you say that is an outcome? Isn't that like reporting something that happened? Because the topic, if you look at page 2, bottom, says outcome 7. Now, there we seem to be reporting something that has happened. That's how I read the statement. Go ahead.
Thank you, Chair. The national outcomes and government priorities that are set out in the NPS outcome for the prisons, outcome 7 talks to rural development and food security. So our department does, and the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform contribute to this outcome. So these are activities that are set out in the NCSF for the department concerned to contribute to outcome 7. These are the activities that the department should take note of and also respond to.
Okay, next, the problems will begin. 2013, we're now in 2015. Outcome is something that must still happen in the future. That's why I said, if we're talking 2013, it looks like we're reporting on something that happened. Maybe the problem then is with the year, if that's a proposed outcome. Thank you.
2021 on OBP. As far as I can remember, the discussion really was that we must also discuss the, I would almost say, the function of OBP in relation to the fact that it's a national system. It was not so much the funding of it, but it is as, I don't know how to, because in this one it just looks like we want it to be called funding, but it's also to look at the function in relation to the national peace health, the national people's strategy to look after the legal or to look after the safety of animal health. So, because that would be linked to the funding ultimately, but I think we need to bring that in as people's function. Ensure that while the proper plan to consolidate conditional grants in grant process as well previously recommended to gain developed, the department strengthen monitoring of the grants to avoid wasteful expenditures and underdeveloped understanding. In this regard, a detailed report should be submitted to the committee on how that plans to monitor the use of conditional grants in progress. Also indicating the shortfalls in areas where cuts and the Lima grant will be redirected to the Zatlava. So, the report expected by the end of June. Some of the revisions of the department budget cuts were reported to be due to poor planning, lack of monitoring, inability to ensure that conditional grants, in particular, are effectively utilized for the purpose that they were meant for, and within the stipulated time frame. The department should be ready to be committed by August 2016. A plan on how to address the issues that were raised by National Treasury and Auditor General regarding the budgetary use, stretching the target and unreliable data or lack of such documents.
Thanks for the opportunity, Chair. This is quite a sore point in the operations of the department. Number one, my feeling says that by August, the department will have gone deep in suspending this financial year's budget. More damage could have happened by then. Is it not as possible for them to come back to us, you know, when this year by June next month? Given that this month is so terribly busy, because we want to be sure that their plans or their report on how they are addressing these issues, you know, is acceptable to us, and that if they go deeper into the new financial year, they would have corrected them. These are just administrative hiccups, you know, lack of such judgments and, you know, and stuff like that. So that's basically my concern.
Okay. The
question
of the
day,
remember, we are doing that with this one. Come to nearby or economic and planet statistics. Chickerton, you know, practically is not going to work. I think if it keeps this date, also when they come back for the planning for next year already, and that. So I think they do it like that, but then you must keep them to it. Because it will give them enough time, it will also fit in maybe with the midterm budget proposal changes, and so it will give them enough time, you know, I guess the point of the will keep them to that. And just to add one more question, if you remember we had the strategic plan where planning and monitoring came to present to us about time. The advice that the department has to do. There were one way for that the report of the first plan. Actually, it was being engaged throughout. This one is the day that you know that the CPA and the CPA comes. The third recommendation, certain direct and mandate functions of the department are budgeted for and carried outside the department, e.g. animal and health management, is a function of staff, which does not feature anywhere in that plan, but is one of the programs in the Department of Rural Development Land Reform with a budget of approximately 772 million. By the end of July 2016, the department should provide a detailed report on this, including other activities that are carried out by the department, other departments, or even entities as mentioned by the Committee on Livestock Development Program, without collaboration with staff, and also explaining if the response to such cost-cutting matters, including budget implications. Agreed? For ensure that the integrated funding model, which was reported to have been developed by staff, Department of Rural Development, Land and Reform and Land Bank finalized and a detailed report is submitted and presented by all these adjourned committees by end of July. It is not early for the joint because we need to have a joint meeting with the World Development ourselves before we call it. So I think July is early. Honorable
thing? If we can maybe also look at all those institutions, we can know also the interest. Why not also looking at that time frame? Also the time when the deposits are starting to look at the adjustment budget.
Agreed. 8.5. Ensure that the committee continues concerns regarding the alignment of services and activities between the department and distributors and programs are addressed. As this can also assist the department with cost containment measures given the budget cut and better service delivery. Alignment of activity is also important between the department, entities, and the Department of Rural Development Land Reform which is becoming a source of external funding for the department and entities. The alignment and collaboration are particularly important for the implementation of APEC, which the committee comes wanting in this regard, and in addressing the budget shortfall within the goals. Therefore, by August, during the 2016-16 third quarter report, briefing by the department to present the report briefing, the department should present the committee a detailed plan as was previously requested, including financial commitments. But this one is supposed to go with the funding model, because it's a thing, and I've said to myself. You should see the risk. I need to, because I've tried to explain to my daughter that you should not confuse the shooting. The funding model of the APEC, something else, and we have hours that were recommended in the last financial year of one workshop of conditional grants. So the APEC thing and the collaboration and the funding model, they go together. I'm not sure whether you understand what I'm saying. They go together. It means that you must get the report. And I have to process myself not to combine it so that it becomes one resolution for the funding model and the APEC and then the collaboration thing. Well, that is where APEC is being implemented and is a document of cabinet, so it can make everybody's work out. So it must be combined with that one. And the deadline will be September. Yes, not so long.
The
the first resolution, where we're saying the president will come and explain to us with regards to the task that the human is doing, redirected to Professor Khanna, which means they will even have to explain the implication thereof.
Sorry, I'm not going to do
that. 8.6, present to the committee by the end of August 2015 on how to explain the implication of funding reduction on conditional grants and reporting. Can we remind each other that the deduction is not from the 385 million, not from conditional grant, not from conditional grant. You remember, it was from economic, international economic, or something of the department. Thank you.
Administration of the X.
Chairperson, I think you must rather reserve their comment that I am rejecting something that I have never seen. Thank you.
Okay. and countries that have interest in fishery services. So you have countries that are not necessarily having oceans, but in these regional fisheries management organizations, they are interested to also fishermen. So they also come and form part of those regional fisheries management organizations. Most of them manage fish stocks that are found in a specific area, while others are focusing on particularly highly migratory species like the tuna, for instance, which migrates throughout the vast geographic area. So you find the tuna in South Africa, the same tuna is migrating and it can go to Australia. So it's very highly migratory species we're talking about. Some RSMOs have purely an advisory role, but most of them have management power, which means that they are able to set a total allowable catch. Because it's a group of countries that come together and want to fish a particular species in the water. So they do set to say a country X is going to be able to catch so much of this fish. Some they also give technical measures in terms of how that fish should be caught, how that fish should be preserved, and also control obligations, which of course talks to the issues of conservation in terms of fishery, that we don't wipe out all the stocks in the ocean. Now, we are bringing this in particular for the interest to the honorable members, but the European Union is represented in all of these other members. Most of them are active in about 11, which are some non-tuna organizations. Now, the EU, through its commission, represents the EU in this thing. And all member countries of different EU countries also represent themselves. So, in essence, you are having the EU states double represented in these regional fisheries management organizations. And we are saying, hence it is very crucial that Africa and maybe the African Union needs to re-look into this matter, because the issue of representation then matters. More powers you get by more of the representation that you are getting. And we think that we really need to really start waking up as African countries so that we can play an active role in this thing. Now, the background to the matter at hand, that was requested to provide the portfolio in terms of additional background information that would assist them in the consideration of these three fisheries agreements about the key, the INTC, CSDT, and the hostage measure. So this presentation seeks to address the portfolio committee's concerns and should be viewed with the formal staff response that was submitted to the committee on the 20th of March, which is detailed in terms of those, but we are highlighting just the few here. And now, with regards to the issue of the legal opinion, there was an issue from the honorable members that it seems that they were old, they were done previously at that time, and that if they needed to kind of maybe see if they are still relevant in terms of those opinions that were given. But a new updated legal opinions were requested by the department from both the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development and DERCOM, and those are also attached in the information packages that were sent through. There were no amendments that have taken place in all of these issues. This was an issue that the honorable members that have raised, that these were old, maybe some changes have happened. And these were reviewed also by the state law advisors. And therefore, the opinion has originally given, that is that the three fisheries agreements are not in conflict with South African law, and they remain the opinion of both departments. Also, the agreements are all multilateral instruments, and with respect to signature, there is no master copy that is signed, and this copy is held by the depository. Consequently, there will also not be a South African text that needs to be printed on South African printing paper. This was an opinion that was given by DERCO, and it is further detailed on the attachments that we have sent as well of the opinion from DERCO. And regarding to the impact of Operation Akiva, DERCO has noted that because the agreement aims to establish best international practices with respect to the conservation, the management and the sustainable use of marine resources, so they understand it to be in line with the objectives of Operation Akiva in respect to unlocking the economic potential from South African countries, and I think this is related to what I have indicated to in the introduction when I was showing the slide, that this is a growing industry in terms of the solutions and the role that tuna play into that in terms of unlocking that potential economy, economic potential of the ocean. And with regard to the state of department with UDIA and DAF, and whether this would affect the implementation of agreement, DELCO has noted that in principle, this should not affect the implementation. With regard to the spot fish measure agreement, which is an SIO agreement, accession or ratification, there was an issue that why are we accessing and not ratifying. The agreement was open for signature until 21 November 2010. After that date, it was open for accession. So it means that there's no party that can ratify the agreement beyond 21 November 2010. And therefore, all countries that come beyond that date can only accede to the agreement. And on the 19th of October 2014, 11 countries, and this is still like that, I have checked this morning as well, there is still 11 countries that have ratified the agreement. There is three in Africa, Mozambique, Rachel, and the Republic of Gabon. Those are the three countries that have succeeded there as yet. Now, with regard to the assistance to bureaucracy, there is Article 12, 21 of this agreement for state measures. It reads for its practice shall give full recognition to the special requirements of developing state parties in relation to the implementation of sports state measures consistent with this agreement. South Africa is a developing country, and as such, we have already received support from RFMOs, particularly with regard to training and assistance of RFMOs. Now, the issue again here, as the honorable member said, was that it looked like priority will be given to those least developed countries and your island states, but we want to confirm that South Africa is indeed a part of the countries that are listed as high priority. Also, the reason that South Africa is listed as such is because of our geographic strategical location. We are at the bottom of the continent. We have got three oceans, the Atlantic Ocean, we have the Indian Ocean, we have got the Southern Sea, and we are kind of a stop shop in terms of all the routes of the ships that also go to Antarctica and the Marion Islands. So everybody that goes to Antarctica passes through us. So we are regarded as a very critical state that is very, very important in terms of making sure that our ports are safe, that measures are put and controlled, so that we can try and eliminate all these forms of illegal activities that happen through the ocean. And I think the honorable members will remember that not simply the 5% part, South Africa's passport was put under a huge scrutiny in terms of that it was easy to be defrauded or somebody duplicate our passport. And one of the reasons was that we were also deemed a critical route for the trafficking of drugs, trafficking of human beings and other related issues, whereby those things, even if they are destined for Brazil or the East Island and everything, they pass through us first, which I think also bears testimony when we hear the reports of the South Africans that are in the jails and prisons of Brazil and Thailand and other countries. So this is one of the critical issues that the court state measure seeks to say. South Africa, you are very critical because you are very important. Now, on the issue of denying access to our ports, South Africa has implemented certain segments of court state measures through the requirements by all RFMOs, even the Atlantic Tunas, your ICAT, your CAMELA, SST, and INTC. They as well have a component of state port measures that are in there. However, these measures are limited, and they only deal with pieces under the purview of the relevant RFMOs. The same capacity that is currently being used to implement port state measures under the RFMOs will largely be used to implement the FAO port state measures agreement. However, we agree that it is not optimal, the capacity that we are having, and hence, if we accede to this, we'll be able to get this access under the Article 21. Now, various queries were raised in respect of the explanatory memo by the honorable members, and this is the response that we summarized this into. Briefly, set out the history and objectives and implementation of the agreement,
the office of the DG obtained the cabinet minutes of the 7th of August 2016, which was provided to the chairperson of the portfolio committee. Unfortunately, we cannot distribute freely this document because it is a classified document. Not everyone should be able to hand on what the cabinet memo and all agreements and self-executing provisions that will become law in the Republic in terms of section 3-1 or 4 of the Constitution upon the approval of the agreement by Parliament. The projected financial and other costs of the agreement for the state also we're going to talk about that in the next slide. And that has attended 3 separate opinions from the Department of Justice, DERCO, containing each of these 7 included such together with the experimental memo. There are those in letterhead coming from these 2 government departments. Now, with regards to the question that was raised about the issue of jobs and the extent of influence of full members with regards to the vulnerable groups, according to IOCC and DCSBT agreement, provides direct benefits to the economy, as explained, of South Africa, and even indirect benefits to the vulnerable groups, which also provides opportunities for employment. For instance, currently, because we are not yet full members of this, we don't even the vessels that we use in our water, we charter vessels. We don't have South Africa made vessels for us to be able to catch this. But if we do these accessions and we fully develop the capability of the state in doing so, we provide opportunities even for the vulnerable groups in terms of employment, for the youth as well, quite very key thing that they can participate into. And these jobs can be permanent jobs, because as I'm saying, these are highly migratory species. You find them, so tuna happens in a fishing in a fairly longer period than other species where you have a very small window period of the fishing season. So the tuna would really provide a kind of consistent period of fishing. The hostage measures also strives to create a network of hostages to fight IUU, which is the illegal, unregulated, and unreported fishing, which would serve to provide additional protection of Africa's marine resources, including South Africa's marine resources, from being plundered by foreign IUU themselves. And therefore, this reducing IUU would increase the amount of marine resources to be used by South Africans in general. And also, we'd like to point out to the Honourable Members that in 2013, the chair of the AU Commission, Dr. Professor Amini Zuma, she launched the AIM, Africa Integrated Maritime Security Strategy, in Cape Town in 2016 in December. And part of this Africa Integrated Maritime, and South Africa was very instrumental in crafting this, was for the exact reason of realizing that we need to take further action and really tighten our efforts around IEU. And these agreements and the post-state measure kind of feed on that Africa Integrated Maritime Security Strategy. Now, the issue on the extent of influence by state measures by member states, it was raised by the committee that the memo previously seems to be misleading, that since South Africa is a cooperating and non-contracting party, that we seem not to influence decisions and stuff like that. Now, South Africa is allowed to participate in meetings, but the level of participation is limited because we are non-contracting parties. Therefore, we are not allowed to submit written proposals to be considered by members. Now, this issue is about setting the agenda, because if you cannot submit a proposal, it means you only support those proposals that are pushed by other countries. So you are basically just supporting people's ideas and what they want to do. But as a country, you can't set your own agenda and get what it is that you want to get out of it. And also, in the society, South Africa is not allowed into the negotiation of quota. That is a very big thing. Because if you sit there as non-contracting parties, we don't decide how much we get. Those that are contracting parties, they tell South Africa how much we are going to get. Now, noting that all decisions of RFMOs are taken by 100% consensus of its member parties, meaning that if South Africa acceded, we would be in a stronger negotiating position regarding the dealing of quotas and proposals. in an equitable manner. Now, one of the problems, I think, is also important that we indicate to you that absolutely, how this RFM will run, absolutely, so if you are not fully recognized as a member, you have very limited power to do anything, and you cannot complain, you have no right to complain. And how these allocations are done are not equitable at all, which I will show in the next slide how that is not. Now, with regards to the implications of the money, the honorable member also asked what would be the implications if we accede to this now. The currency of member fees is determined by the location of the secretariat. Some secretariats are based in very expensive countries. For instance, CCSDT is based in Australia and operates in Australian dollars. IOCC is based in the Seychelles and operates in the United States dollar currency. Furthermore, state member fees are determined annually by a specific formula that is adopted by the representative RFMO. Again, even in the issue of fees, South Africa currently can't say much on the fee structure and everything, but if you are a full member, then you are able to make submissions and be able to determine this issue. But there are general guidelines that are used that assess how and how much each country pays. Some of them are defined and are taken from the World Bank classification of countries, like if not countries, you are better in this way, your GDP is based. Also, it is based on historical catches. So what it means is that those countries that have proven that they can catch these tunas more, they are deemed as fit to be given even more quota, and also they will pay much more benefits if you are given and you are catching much more. Also, the other category, the three things that is considered is the annual overall budget that is determined by the RFMO, so which means therefore each RFMO has got its operations that they do. So they look at their overhead and they say for this year we are going to need 5 million. So when they determine the fee structure, they make it a point that all members' contributions should come at least to that 5 million or even above. So those are the three things basically that are considered in determining the fee. These are the last estimates that we received in 2015. In terms of the payment of the fees. So the SPT, as we see, the Australian dollar is 90,505 Australian dollars, which translates to about 848 in our currency. And for IOTC as well, we are going to be paying about 648 if we become a member of the station. Now, with the issue of the importance of accessing to the SPT, and we thought we should also give a background in terms of what our current capacity is. Currently, South Africa has about 230 vessels in the large pelagics. Now, the large pelagics are all those tuna and tuna-like species. So it's not only just the tuna, but there's other things as well. And this is inclusive of tuna pole and long line as well. We've got about 163 on tuna pole and about 50 on long line. These are the vessels, honorable members, that are registered in our system. However, not all of these vessels are active, which means they are not all catching. So sometimes if there is nothing to catch, then there is literally nothing. The long line fishery alone creates around 400 direct jobs on board of these vessels, given the allocation and what they are catching. Now, for Southern Bluefin Tuna, in 2014-15 fishing season, the total income that was generated from the current 40 tons, because on the Southern Bluefin Tuna, we only have 40 tons because we are not full members. It was the income was approximately 224 million. So, which means that if we are on 40 tons, we are making 24 million. And when we accede, we can increase our tonnage allocation to 150 tons. That is almost 3 tons. So that is about 72 tons extra, which would translate to close to about 100 million if you calculate it in that way. Of course, this assuming that all inputs increase proportionally. So what this basically means is that if our quota increases to 150 tons, we can find the fish. We have the boats, they are efficient, then we can be able to kind of generate that amount of income. And again, we're just trying to show the value of Southern Bluefin Tuna. In 2013, one tuna in Japan market, tuna market, sold for 20 million rand, one tuna in 2013. Unfortunately, that tuna was not caught by the South African in our waters, it was caught by the Japanese. So they made the money, we lost out. Now, the issue, again, in terms of accident at IOTC area, is also effort related. Instead of setting TAC, there is a limited number of vessels that can operate in an area. Currently, we have got an allocation of 50 vessels that can operate in our waters for this. But as I say, they don't belong to South Africa, they belong to the Japanese, so we're not necessarily getting much out of it. Now, which means that in 2019, there was now the right and the quota has been allocated until 2019. It is only until 2019 new quotas are going to be allocated. We are hoping and we are going to make sure that we also work very much closely with institutions so that by this year or the end of this year, at least all these are in place so that when it is 2019, we are already full members and we can be able to participate. This is the slide, honorable members, I'm trying to indicate to you that there is no fairness in this if you don't have a big choice. The red part shows you the high density of the existence of the thousand protein tuna alone. Low density is your yellow and your pinkish there is your medium density. Now, I want you to notice, there is Korea up there in 2014. So you see that Korea does not even have the high density of tuna in their water. But they come to fish because in 2014, their quota was 1,045 tons. And in 2015 and until 2017, they have got 1,140 tons. Japan as well, there is Japan out there, no bluefin tuna, but in this RFMO, in 2014, they had 3,400 tonnage, 4.7 tonnage in 2015 and 2017. At least Australia, you can see the east and the southern part of Australia, there are some red there. So Australia has got a tonnage in 2014 of 5,103 tons. And in 2016 and 2017, there is 5.6 tonnage. Indonesia, even though this is there, Indonesia as the island around Indonesia in 2014 had 750 tonnage, 750 skills in 2016 and 2017. Interesting, come to South Africa. We have a massive occurrence of tuna in our water. We have 40 tons of tuna. 2014, we have 40 tons. Also until 2017. So this is just to show how much we are losing out for people who are not accidents. And again, this issue was around the available enforcement resources. And I think it's important to note that the current capacity that is required is three inshore patrol vessels and one offshore vessel. We've got firefighting at sea boarding vessels as well in addition to the legislation, training conditions and post-aid measures. And most of the inspections have been, inspectors have been recruited from enforcement agencies such as FAB, SNA, RS. But again, I think here we are trying to emphasize that I think the question the members were asking, are we able to enforce these measures with the capacity that we're having? And as we have said, it may not be enough, and we are hoping that we can be able to deploy the available regional resources that we are having in a different way, and also latch on the availability of the assistance under Article 21. This is just the conclusion, and the conclusion, I'm not going to waste your time and go through it. It is just basically summarizing all the issues that we are talking about in terms of the benefits we are seeing potentially creating the jobs. And in terms of why South Africa has to accept because of our strategic position, and again, here is also just a conclusion in terms of what the post-aid measures seek to do, including the IUU. And the same, we are recommending that the parliament should approve or grant South Africa the ability to access to this. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair. May I just put on record, Acting DDG, that this was a really an excellent presentation. Lots of the questions that I have been answered before I even asked them. I'm really, really, truly impressed. Now, we support the accession to the agreement. I've just got a number of little questions. Maybe that's even been answered. Okay. Slide 9. I would like to know whether there are any other costs other than membership fees that will be encountered. And then you refer to three opinions. With differing views, did I hear that discussed? Differing views? It was described. Okay, that's the word. Okay, you've covered the position we'd be in terms of our influence on things like the cash and those kinds of things. Okay, then I would like to know if you could please state explicitly what we can and can't do and the implications that it will have on us. And then on slide 12, okay, now that deals with the job, the increased tonnage from 24 million rand income to 100 million rand income. And it seems to me as if a lot of emphasis is being placed on increased allocations and more jobs and boosting the economy. I would like to know whether the department has considered the effect the increased allocation will have on sustainability of the species, bearing in mind that you say it's a highly migratory species, but it seems to be concentrated a lot of it in our water. That's about it. Thank you.
Just for I'm worried about the what we get, but the things up and stuff. In terms of that, what are we not doing? What can we do about facilities? But in terms of them, what South Africa can do and what South Africa is not doing to help them to future income.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Thank you, Honorable Members. With regard to the questions raised by Honorable Young Blues, yes, there are other costs besides membership. These costs relate to meeting attendances. Because when we accept, even if currently we are not accepting, it is important that you must be present in the meeting so that we are seen as committed in doing so. So the other cost would be the cost of the meeting. Usually RFMOs have got two types of meetings. You've got commission meetings and you've got intersessional meetings. And all the time you will require to at least send maybe two delegates minimum to this meeting. And again, let me also indicate that EU sends about 30 delegates
America comes with about 40 delegates. They even very huge spaces that they need. It's about making a presence, or the presence is about the statement, which also explains why America and other countries have got huge embassies in our country. But yes, definitely the cost of travel and stuff is what is going to cost us more. We are already doing that, so we are already paying the participation in this meeting. With regard to the issue of what we can do, what we can't do, and the implications, one of the issues is that once you access to these RFMOs, as I was saying, some RFMOs are only there to advise. Some have got management power. So when it is decided that South Africa, you shall inspect all the foreign vessels that come into your port. If we fail to do so, the implication is that South Africa can be penalized. Now, penalties are determined in various ways, and penalties are decided during the meeting. Sometimes they say to penalize you, South Africa, if you've got this 150 tons in the next fishing season, you are not going to catch anything or something happens. This is just an example, but the measures or penalties, they are decided during the meeting. And of course, there needs to be consensus that we're saying that these are not true consensus. What can we do? What we can do, I think, is simple. We need to rearrange the little resources that we are having so that we know exactly what is that is of assistance we are going to need under Article 21 of Portage Measures. Then that will put us in a better position how to negotiate for the enhancement or value add by Article 21 of this Portage Measure. The last question Honorable Young was asked with regards to the issue of sustainability. So it's saying if our quota increases, how is that affecting the sustainability of this? It will not affect it at all, because in all the regional fisheries management organizations, there is a scientific working group that does stock assessment. So what they do, they look at precautionary measures of how much of this tuna can be taken. So there is monitoring of this tuna in the waters. It is done at a regional fisheries management organization by scientists who are dedicated to doing that work. So what simply it means is that when they decide that only 5,000 tons can be taken, what becomes the decision is how much of the 5,000 goes to each country. So what is simply going to happen on that 40 to 150? We are not going to be harvesting new fish, but we will be doing adjustments on those members who already have 2,000 tons, 1,000 tons. So we may say during the meeting, let's take 20 tons from Japan, let's take 1 ton from Indonesia for 750 tons, let's take from those. So simply taking from those who have bigger to supplement here. So definitely no effect at all on the issue of sustainability. And with regard to the question that the Honorable Matrikwan has, in terms of what is the issue that we are not doing that we are taking this 40 tons. I think to answer you, Honorable Matrikwan, maybe the issue to emphasize here is that all regional fisheries management organizations are UN babies. So they operate in the UN style of government. Now we know in the UN system that you can have something in your country which maybe is minerals or a natural resource. You would have someone who doesn't have but they have more power to access it and harvest it in your country. So in layman's terms, that's exactly what is happening in the RFMO, which is why we need to increase our participation, one, and also we need to be very strategic in terms of what are the issues that we bring there. As long as we continue to have no ability to push proposals because we are not contracted parties, the status quo will forever remain. Thank you. Yeah, actually, Honorable Chair, through you, I just took here just the example that all of the countries that are apart, it's close about 50 countries, that have been assisting Kenya. So I was just trying to show you the difference that South Africa has in so much as getting so detailed and others so far away.
Thank you.
Okay, you'll get an SMS. Hey,
telephone number yakho mani apha ne-email address khake uncedile usiphoke kuba unikile sibenze sifuna i-simple language.
Ewe, because iyaunderstand.
Ya, even ayo uthetha fast uthetha fast
banyena
ngoku uyandishiyeka ndibhale noku uyashiyeka
hakalo nabo aprefeyisa kwezinye iindawo especially xa unelantezi xa une-presentation I don't know if there's a dating, I don't know if there's a dating, because